loved the Roman goddess Diana. Part of my fascination with her is the fact that she is associated with the moon, with forests, with animals, and these are all things I've loved my whole life, and they continue to serve as spiritual inspirations for me. Part of my fascination is her depiction, like the one behind me and the one in front of me, where she appears graceful and powerful, often accompanied by animals, as in this image here with a stag. The statue is my own. I brought it from home. It looks a lot bigger at home. It's not so tall among these ceilings, but nonetheless, between me and it, it filled my Prius. I also have a few oil paintings and probably about 30-some prints and lithographs, but I thought, well, my car was already full enough. Another part of my fascination with Diana is also inexplicable. Sometimes we like the things we do because we do. It's emotional, it's intuitive. So there's a paradox here. I can partly rationally explain why I love Diana on one hand, yet on the other, part of my love is based solely on emotional and instinctual attraction. It's something I can't adequately explain to others. This is not a contradiction for me. A contradiction is something that is difficult or even impossible to rectify. A paradox is something that at first glance might seem a contradiction, but upon further investigation or explanation, may indeed prove to be well-founded or compatible or true. Now, if I limited myself to thinking in a binary, that something can be explained rationally or it can be explained emotionally, that would produce a contradiction. However, when I allow myself to step into paradox and allow these two things to come together in the middle, they not only become reconcilable, but they open up a new place for me to stand spiritually. For you see, I consider myself a religious humanist. To many of the people who identify with either the word religion or humanism, they more than likely do not identify with the other word, seeing it as a contradiction. The symbol that was up there prior to this one was a Venn diagram. Right? So we had two white circles, and then where they overlapped and intersected, it was red. Now, if you are religious and live in one white circle, or you're a humanist and you live in the other white circle, for those theological positions, right, the other may indeed be a contradiction. Right? A humanist might say, right, I reject supernatural explanations, therefore I do not practice a religion. Individuals who embrace a religion might say, well, I do embrace supernatural explanations, and that's why I'm religious and not a humanist. Right? Those would be exclusionary and contradictory. So in calling myself a religious humanist, am I trying to live out a contradiction, putting together two ideas that don't make sense and don't belong together? No, for me, religious humanism is not a contradiction, it's a paradox. I do not love Diana as a literal and real goddess of supernatural powers who's out there somewhere. I don't have any issue with someone who does, but to me that does not make rational sense. That's my humanist side. I favor rational, natural, and scientific explanations of reality. But at the same time, I love Diana as an archetype, a symbolic representative of nature, of the moon, of forests, of animals. Right? These are all things that I adore, and they help to inform my green and vegan ethics. An author with the pen name Natural Pantheist wrote in the book Godless Paganism that the pagan gods do not need to be literal, supernatural beings living out there in the universe somewhere for them to be inspirational and meaningful to those of us who honor the earth. And I agree with Natural Pantheist. That feels right to me too. I cannot offer a particularly convincing explanation to others of why this is so, and that's the religious side of me. So religious humanism is about bringing an emotional and spiritual element to our experience of the universe, but without embracing supernatural explanations. Each of those things is enhanced by the other. So for me, spirituality and humanism do not negate or oppose one another, They complement one another, right? And they complement one another when I allow myself to step into the paradox between them. Non-theist pagan author Stassi Morgan-Appel, also in the book Godless Paganism, and I brought my copy with me if you're curious later, she wrote in the book that there are many ways to define that which is sacred or greater than yourself. So if we only define non-theism as the opposite of belief in God, that merely uses the antithesis of theism to create a contradictory binary. But, says Stassi Morgan-Appel, theism and non-theism would be much better understood as a paradoxical continuum containing many possibilities, not an either-or binary. Right? So for our going back to our Venn diagram, where the two white circles overlap, in that red circle there are many possibilities, many spiritual possibilities to stand in. The idea that religion is a binary, that either you have it and you're over here with the theists, or you do not have it and you're over here with the atheists, this is a cultural inheritance from the evangelical nature of Christianity. Right? Where in Christianity, either you're in our circle or you're out of our circle, right? There's truth and we're it, and there's falseness, right, which is everything else. But this assumption sets up a false binary between theism and atheism. Natural and scientific understandings of the universe are not necessarily incompatible with religious or spiritual ones. Right? Or, at least they are not for those of us who identify as religious humanists, religious naturalists, non-theist pagans, and there are a host of other potential synonyms showing you the complexity, right, of where you can stand in that paradoxical middle. Right? There are even many terms to go along with it. Not everyone who embraces humanism or religion is going to agree with me or with natural pantheist or with Stassi Morgan-Appel, and that's okay. None of us are attempting to evangelize all theists and non-theists to step into the paradoxical middle. But what we are doing, and what religious humanists are attempting to do for others, is to highlight that by embracing paradox, it presents us with a meaningful spiritual place to stand. One that didn't exist before. Right? If we only look at the binary, there's no room for us. We would not enjoy that same sense of spirituality and wonder and awe without standing in the paradox. Well, what about other situations? Are there other times when embracing a paradox might be helpful? Well, what about right and wrong? First Nations author and poet Louise Erdrich wrote, "Right and wrong were shades of meaning, not sides of a coin." About a year ago, a friend and I were having a phone conversation. She was struggling with the loss of her mother, but more than that, at the same time she lost her mother, she became estranged from her son. What had happened is that at the time of her mother's passing, she had distributed jewelry, her mother's jewelry, to some of the people that were there. Seeing his mother do that, her son exploded and accused her of being cold and having no respect, being materialistic, doing the wrong thing at the wrong time. Now, maybe her son didn't respond in the best way and handle it the best way, but I imagine many of us are probably at least partly sympathetic to how he was feeling. Maybe someone's deathbed is not the best time to be giving their property away. However, my friend had been at her mother's side the longest and was in a different place emotionally than everyone else in the room. For her, the worst of her grief and letting go had come before her mother's passing. Passing on the jewelry had been something her mother had requested. So from my friend's point of view, she thought, well, passing on the jewelry now, when people are grieving, could be comforting, right? They'll have something materialistic that they can hold in their hands from their grandmother or their aunt. And she thought, well, this could be a source of comfort for them. So for her, it felt like the right time and the right place. And if we were in her place, and that was where we were, I imagine many of us might see ourselves doing the same thing. So both of them felt that their point of view was the right point of view, but not only that, obviously so, right? Everyone would agree with me. Right? My perception of the situation is the right perception. And in that understandably emotionally charged situation, someone's death, their argument about the situation had gotten ugly, and they had stopped talking. So the opportunity to explain how they perceived the situation and then allow the other person to respond, oh, I could understand why you saw it that way, but here's what I intended. Right, so they had no conversation about here were my intentions, here was how it impacted me, and in a back and forth. Instead, it had just led to a split. My phone call with my friend was several weeks after this had all transpired. And after she explained the whole story to me, as I just did to you, I responded by saying, you know, I totally understood why she did as she did, and I totally understood why she was hurt by that and by her son's response. And she, as you could imagine, was very glad that I stood with her and supported her and said she was right. I then continued saying, I totally understood why her son might find it peculiar or even offensive to be handing out his grandmother's jewelry at her deathbed. And she was less thrilled that I then said he was right and stood with him. But it seemed to me that both of their interpretations of the situation were right from where each of them were at that time. There didn't seem to be a single right and a single wrong in this situation in a clear binary. And given when this had happened, or the circumstances in which this had happened, right, it was helpful for them to have a neutral third party help them unlock the impasse that they had. We can understand how two people in a tragic and in an emotionally heavy situation like someone's death could have gotten locked into a binary, right? I'm right, they're totally wrong, right? And the other person was seeing it in reverse in a contradictory manner. But it took stepping into the paradox of the situation where rightness and wrongness became much more complex, a both and situation, and not a binary that was composed simply of an or, right? There's a right or a wrong. And when my friend was able to do that and step into the paradox and make right and wrong more complex and complicated, right, that she was able to appreciate the intent and the impact of what she had done as well as what her son had done. When situations involve people and values we care a great deal about, it's so easy to slip into thinking in a binary. Right? So in the case of right and wrong, right, we all want to be right, don't we? Right. Oftentimes, right, it's so very easy to convince ourselves, yes, we're 100% right, they're 100% wrong. Are there times where it lays out that cleanly? Sure, there's probably times where right and wrong are that simple and clean. But life is also very complex and paradoxical, and there are times where there are only rights or only wrongs or potential combinations in between. In the meditation, I provide a quote from a theologian, Paul Tillich. Life remains ambiguous as long as there is life. Indeed, to exist, to be human, means that we live in ambiguity and paradox. Now, if something like right and wrong can exist in a paradoxical relationship, well, what about some other aspects of our lives? Are there other things that might be better understood as a paradox and not as a binary? What about success and failure? How many times do we try to do something and the very first time it's perfect and we meet with success? Not very often, right? So pathways to success are often combined with failure, right? That the two of them exist in a paradoxical relationship. What about having dreams and the responsibility that those dreams can have? Let's say you're pursuing a dream career, like being a UU minister, let's say. And it takes a lot of work and dedication and time. And you finally get there, and then guess what? It's a whole lot of work, and it's hard, and it brings a lot of responsibility. There's lots of aspects of adulthood that are like that, right? And they bring pleasure, but also responsibility at the same time. How about blessings and challenges? So I did a sermon practice about a week ago, and the folks who were there, we did some brainstorming about, you know, what are some other everyday examples of a paradox. And one that occurred to us there was blessings and challenges. And I asked Reverend Seth, hey, is it a blessing to have 3 children under the age of 4? And he said, yes, it sure is. I said, is it a challenge to have 3 children under the age of 4? He said, yes, it is, right? Those two things can exist at one and the same time as well. Now, what our everyday paradoxes may be are going to change based on who we are, what kind of life we have, what our idiosyncrasies are, etc. But the fact that we live in a paradox is probably a fact, right? If we all put our minds to it, there are many ways that we live in paradoxes and in ambiguity on a regular basis. Toy company owner and speaker on creativity, Roger Von Eck, said this, quote, take advantage of the ambiguity in the world. Look at something and think what else it might be, end quote. So when we take a binary and instead step into the middle, into the paradox of it, we create something new for ourselves, a new range of possibilities, out of the old binary that left us with just 2 options. There are times in our lives where embracing paradox might be the most meaningful place to stand in a situation. And my wish for all of us is that we may find or not find those paradoxes in our lives that grant us new blessings and new meanings. So be it, and so may it be.